This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, and streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week are Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Stephen Lockridge.
Hello.
And this week we have three main reviews. We're going to kick off with Cyborg Deadly Machine. Then we're going to go on to Voorhees and The Death of Me. Our short shot this week is Hammer Down. And our DTV throwback will be Exit Speed. So without any further ado, let's crack on. So our first review is Cyborg Deadly Machine. In the future, the machines have taken over, but humanity is starting to strike back. A handful of rebels, with the help of a bounty hunter called Rain and his trusty AI, intend to unleash a deadly weapon. Right, so this is a brilliant pastiche of basically just about every sort of 80s genre film you can think of. All the classics are sort of represented. Most ostensibly, we've got Terminator, of course. The film is more or less based on the futuristic parts of the original Blade Runner film, and I suppose the second one as well, Judgment Day. Let's kick this straight over to Rich.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought this is just as good as you know, some of the best pastiche, like you say, almost like fan films kind of thing that's turning up on YouTube. So like the passion projects of films like Kung Fury and Commando Ninja, which are just full of stylistic touches and references to all the films we grew up with in the 1980s. So as you rightly said, the Terminator is a big touch point for this one. It starts out with the makers, the Mace Brothers logo, which is done in an Orion film style, and then the opening credits are very much in the style of the Terminator. The future war sort of setting is all set up. And there's lots of practical visual effects rather than CGI, which is quite interesting. The thing I didn't like about one of the things I didn't like about the new Terminator film was like the over reliance on the CG and how artificial it looked. Now, in this, you get something that looks equally artificial but quite charming, because it's that sort of stop motion style that you just don't really see anymore. So I quite like that. There's just loads of great little bits in it. One of them is a supporting character who's an AI called Harry, is it? AI Harry, who's responsible for most of the sort of jokes in the movie, I would say. There is a lot of humour. It's played quite straight, and there's some horrific moments in it, but it is very, very much sort of playing playing for some laughs. And there's little digressions into different stylistic forms and little joke advert sequence as well that I'm sure we'll come to. And a great synth score, which all these films have to have, really.
Steve, what do you make of Cyborg?
Yeah, it's fun. I don't think there's an original idea in there at all. Like you say, it is an amalgamation of every single 80s sci-fi action film. But it's fun. It's a bit gory. AI is really funny. Did you watch the dub version or the original French version?
I watched the dub version.
I watched it. It gave a bit more comedy to it, because there are some of the voices were completely ridiculous in it, really. But
I think the French version is dubbed anyway. I think they recorded a dub track in both for both. So I looked at the French version, and it didn't look like it was like organic sound, you know, like it would naturally be watched in French. I think they made it so that it's got that kind of intentionally dubbed over feel, so that whether you're watching it in French or in English, you're not sure which country it might come from.
Right, okay, fair enough then. I get that.
That was the vibe I got from it.
Yeah, yeah. But no, yeah, it's fun. I like the ending. Well, not so much the very end, but like the 16-bit animations and stuff that they put in there and things like that. I thought that was a really nice touch. And yeah, it's just a bit of silly fun. I mean, the only thing that got me was that kept going on about his bloody tomato sauce all the way through it.
That's like the running joke.
Yeah, and it's like, I think they ran with it just slightly too much, you know what I mean? But no,
I didn't think it was that funny in the first place, but I don't know if that was,
exactly.
was the idea.
Well, yeah, see, that sort of reminded me of sort of like some of the sort of spaghetti westerns and things like that, you know, that attempt at humor. Sort of Santiago kind of post-apocalyptic films, and it's just that weird sort of attempt at sort of like an anti-hero kind of humor. I don't care about anything apart from my tomato sauce kind of thing. But I thoroughly enjoyed this, as you probably can tell. The pastiche element worked really well. It was a great setup at the beginning as well, because it sort of establishes these characters in the intro. And it wrong-foots you in a really good way as to who you're meant to be sort of following. I like the fact that Rain's sort of weapon of choice is a frying pan, and he's quite a dab hand at it as well. That was quite good. Yeah, and then these, they sort of blend in these other elements. So we've got the, the klaxon sound from The Thing. We've got the motion sensor from Aliens worked in there as well.
Yeah.
And the model effects, which are very reminiscent of sort of the futuristic parts of Terminator with the Hunter Killers and things like that. Yeah, it worked really well. And I'm pretty sure they also threw in a bit of Nightmare on Elm Street because the guy, one of the Terminator kind of things has these sort of razor-like fingers as well, sort of slashing at people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, just really, really well done.
It's a 50-minute movie. I don't know whether they were originally intending for a shorter, a short film, but they ended up having more footage. But basically, this would generally be classified as a feature, being as I've recently discovered, the Academy and various other awards, they would say anything over 40 minutes is classified as a feature film. Although it has a big, it's a fully formed film. But because it ends at that 50-minute mark, it almost feels like it ends too soon. It's like, no, it should be going on for another 20 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And I wish they'd actually, if they could have got the funding and gone that last, taken that last mile, that would have been great.
I think we also need to mention...
I presume...
You go first.
I presume that hopefully they're going to do... a sequel to finish it off. I'm hoping that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
That will be quite good.
I think we need to mention the mid-credit sequence without going into too much detail, but it was an absolute inspired piece of, something to insert in there. And it is, it fits in so well with the sort of adverts you'd have got for things like Aliens and Rambo in the States. I remember seeing one of the Rambo ones, RoboCop as well. I'm pretty sure RoboCop did something similar because of certain products were put out.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing though, when you think about it though, and you've got all these R-rated 18 action films and then they are cartoon spin-offs.
Yes.
There's a Rambo cartoon, there's a RoboCop cartoon, things like that, just when you think about it now, it's mind-boggling. You wouldn't get it nowadays.
That's what always killed me about Die Hard. That's what always killed me about Die Hard. The original Die Hard was a solid 18 certificate. There's no way, without cutting that film down, it was going to be anything other than 18. Mm. And then by the time you get to the fourth one, it's PG. You think, well, you there's no way these people could have seen the original. Not legally, anyway. But there you go. Yeah, Rich.
No, I was just going to say, even the idea of sort of adding these spoof advert, you know, I know they put it in the credits and stuff, but you know, even that is in itself is kind of a reference to RoboCop because of all the spoof adverts they had within their their story arcs.
Yeah, the SUX 2000.
Yeah, the Nukem board game.
Yeah, the Nukem board game. Yeah.
Which was all so unique to those, you know, to those movies. Especially the first two. I think the third one's not much cop, is it? Let's be honest. But
I've never seen the third one all the way through. I've just seen bits of it. I think my brother was watching it one day, and I walked in the room and back out again.
That was RoboCop for kids, the third one. So.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas the second, what would you call the second one? Sort of for diehard Alan Moore fans, basically. But there you go.
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, sorry, not Rob Moore. So disparaging him with casting aspersions about him having anything to do with with RoboCop 2. Sorry, but there you go. Okay, so
Frank
Cyborg...
Miller did the third one, didn't he?
Who?
Wasn't it the third one? Didn't Frank Miller, wasn't he involved in the third one?
No, he wrote the second one.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And the second one then got bastardized by the studio. Anyway, we digress, of course, as we usually do. Cyborg Deadly Machine is available for free on YouTube, and we shall put the link in the footnotes. Please check it out. It's 50 minutes long. It's a cracking good time, so why not? Our next review is Voorhees. I wonder what this is about. When assistant bank manager Elena is kidnapped by her ex-boyfriend and his gang of biker bank robbers, it turns out to be the least of her worries as the gang are hiding out in an old abandoned camping ground at Crystal Lake. Not only are there corrupt cops on their tail, but Jason Voorhees himself has once more risen from the waters to kill again and again. Right, so this is a fan-made film. It is a full feature, 90 minutes, available on YouTube. Made not-for-profit, as all fan films need to be. And I really enjoyed this because they do something slightly different with the whole sort of mythos of Jason. And they present that sort of nice mashup like you get with... From Dusk Till Dawn, where you got two different genres sort of clashing with each other. And I think this, for the most part, did a really good job. Steve, over to you.
I thought the actual production was well done. Acting was slightly ropey in the majority, especially like the Jason Mewes type dude. I couldn't get with him at all. He was just...
Wow, is he the one that disappears rotten. To have a fuck with the other girl in the stage?
Yeah, you're
absolutely right. Yeah,
he got me tits quite a bit, to be fair. But well shot. I like the kills. Like I say, I'm not really watched many of the Jason films, but I enjoyed it. It was okay. It was. I like the twist with. You know, it wasn't just teenagers at the camp. It was
exactly,
you know, a group of criminals, you know, being used for Jason fodder, shall we say. And I just didn't quite get the twist at the end. And maybe I missed something, but I just wasn't quite sure what it was implying.
Well, we can talk about that off air.
Yeah, we're gonna have to. I'm gonna have to have that out with you lads because it threw me a bit.
I'll be honest. I'll just jump in there and say it did for me as well. But I kind of had to go back and relook at one or two bits, and then it fully clicked for me. It didn't help that I was watching it really late and I accidentally closed my eyes and missed a very key moment.
This is really interesting because I have no idea what either of you are talking about. So yes, we need to have this discussion. Rich, what do you make of Voorhees? Hello.
Yeah. We've watched quite a few fan. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Carry on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. We've watched quite a few fan films of varying degrees of quality. And the last Friday the 13th one we looked at was Never Hike Alone, which was a very, Never Hike in the Snow.
Never Hike in the Snow, yeah.
The prequel. Very film, those two films made to a very high standard and of short running time. This is, say, including credits, 99 minutes is what we were looking at. And I was very intimidated by that because usually long fan films are a bit dubious. So they're, you know, they're baggy and self-indulgent and, you know, they're, because they're not experienced filmmakers, they generally don't know when to cut and, you know, bring scenes down. And really, a Friday the 13th film shouldn't really be over about 85 minutes, in my view. So I was a bit put off initially, and it kicks off. It's much more amateurish than the Never Hike movies, but especially in the performances, as Steve's noted. But there's some really nice cinematography. I think anything where there's sunlight or flames or anything, you know, warm, orangey coloured. There's some lovely cinematography in the film. Mm-hmm. Very well composed shots. The sort of action horror moments are all very well put together. You know, good cutting, good coverage. You know, all the very well, very professionally done in those places. The bit where it falls down is in the acting for the most part, I would say. But I would say it's no worse than some of the other professional, you know, or, you know, professional in either sense, you know, whether it's a bit ropey or, you know, decent quality, low budget films that are out there. You know, for example, like we looked at Witches of Amityville recently. Mm. I would say this is in the same ballpark as that kind of production. You know, this could certainly be a released film if it was made using a different character, you know, a non-intellectual property character, yeah. You know, made as an independent feature film. I think it would have been picked up and distributed and done absolutely fine. It's definitely well worth a look. I mean, say it's free on YouTube, you know, and if you're a horror movie fan, you've really, especially if you're a Friday the 13th fan, you know, you've got to give it a look, give it a try, I'd say.
So, yeah, I totally agree. And I agree with both of you about the acting. It is sort of the most detrimental part of the film, unfortunately. But I think, you know, that is part and parcel with it being a fan film. You know, it's not for profit. It's, you know, you're not going to be able to sort of get sort of quality, you know, seasoned actors. So these are all sort of, you know, Amdram kind of guys, I guess. Some of the delivery is, you know, somnambulistic, unfortunately. You know, there's no emotion put into the scene. It's a shame. You know, you hit the nail on the head with the Jason Mewes kind of guy. There's another element that some of the writing at the beginning is pretty ropey as well. The
Did
two
you
girls
think it took ages to get going.
A little bit.
Part of it
I think as well is that beginning sequence, it wasn't clear what was going on or why. You know, it was funny when the car pulled up, I'm thinking, well, obviously something menacing is happening here. I'm thinking, why would Jason turn up in a car? You know, which is really bizarre. And you know, that whole sort of motive behind the sort of kidnapping side of it was just like, it just wasn't really sort of fleshed out properly at all, which is you can kind of see why they decided to kidnap her and things like that. The interesting bit for me was the fact that because she had a friend with her, when you see them in the back of the car, one of them's wearing a gag, one of them's wearing a blindfold, and it's like, well, that's stupid. Obviously she's going to be able to see why. And then it clicked later on that they weren't expecting her to be with somebody else, so they'd only brought one gag and one blindfold for person.
Yeah.
You know. So I thought, all right, yeah, okay, that makes sense actually, you know. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's a moment there I thought it was gonna go Last House on the Left on us, you know, or even, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn, when Quentin Tarantino's character's in the hotel room alone. You know, because he just didn't know what was going to happen, and it, you know, that sort of, you know, the other girl did get a bit of a hammering before eventually escaping and meeting a different fate. But yeah, so you know, there's a sort of an element of sort of unpredictability about it, which I quite liked. Yeah, and as you said, it was very well shot. The kill scenes were good. That first one was pretty brutal, even though you didn't actually sort of see any gore. You know, the actual act of it was pretty full on, so that was good. So yeah, this was, you know, it is a bit too long. It could have done with sort of jettisoning that early graveyard scene. But other than that, I thought it was pretty damn good. I found myself watching it all the way through. I didn't have my finger hovering on the fast forward button or anything like that at any stage in this film. So yeah, well done, Voorhees. So
guys, just bring up the coppers as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Now I think that could have been got rid of.
Yeah.
I don't think they were completely necessary. They were just, I don't know, they just seem to be there more for laughs, really, you know, to bring a bit of levity to it, but I just don't think it fit.
No, yeah.
But like you said, I think it did take a slight while to get going, but I think once it did and Jason showed up, then that was it. It was just kind of balls to the wall after that, really.
And in reference to the graveyard, I didn't know this until after I'd watched it and I was looking into it, but that is a location used in the original Friday the 13th that they return to. So that's okay. A nice callback for the hardcore fans that they actually go to the actual place where I think it's the final girl from the first movie, where that's where she first gets dropped off in the area. So we first see her there. So that's nice. Another thing I just want to mention is Pamela Voorhees's head. I thought the prosthetic, you know, work on that was really impressive. It's you know, it could have looked pretty ropey, but I thought that was all done quite nicely. As the same was true of the Never Hike movie that we did previously. Yeah. They all handled that sort of stuff a bit very well. The guy so playing Jason looks quite like Jason. Good,
good. Definitely. Scores on the doors, Rich.
I'm going to go for a 7 out of 10. I was, as a final thought, I was quite unsatisfied with the conclusion, because although things kind of go where you expect them to go with, you know, multiple fatalities,
yeah,
it then kind of just there's a couple of little bits and then it just kind of ends. Yeah. And I wasn't...
There's no final girl as such, as a, you know, she never gets to sort of stretch her legs, shall we say.
Yeah, it's a bit more of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of ending, but again, a bit too, it all happens just so suddenly. It's like blink and you'll miss it. And it's like, what? Oh, hang on, it's over already? You know, well, not already, but you know, I've been sort of working through it. And so that was a minor point for me that I was after investing like an hour and a half, it just seemed that the ending just came just a bit too quick for me. So 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. Steve?
I'm going to be 6.
6 and a 7. I'm going to go with a 7. So 2 sevens and a 6 for Voorhees. Again, this is for free on YouTube. It's a fan-made film, as I say. It's not for profit. Taking that into consideration, this is very entertaining and definitely worth checking out, especially if you're a Friday the 13th fan. Okay, so what on earth are you talking about? Is this the gravestone which says Voorhees on it?
Okay, what was your take on the ending of the movie, Mike?
The ending on the movie, so the sheriff's deputy gets away with the, for some reason, with bits of his partner in the car, and the final girl gets captured by Jason, and then it sort of cuts.
What does it cut to?
The gravestone.
And what does the gravestone say?
Just says Voorhees.
Yeah. So she was. This is what I didn't get, because she was at the beginning. Yeah, she put the flowers on the grave.
Yes.
So she was visiting that grave.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be a dad.
Yes.
So is she Jason's sister? Or the connection?
I'm not sure, but she is definitely in the bloodline.
Yeah.
Her father was a Voorhees, so whether he was Pamela Voorhees' brother or cousin, whatever, we don't know. But,
yeah.
But she was definitely a relative.
That's just stupid. Because if she was a relative, then she'd know everything, that she'd know the history. At no point does she give any inkling that she knows what the fuck's going on.
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I mean. It threw me. I'm like, what? Why tie it in? Why bring it back when she's...
No, it doesn't make sense to me. So, yeah, that one just went over my head. I just thought that was just a clever way of sort of calling the end titles. You know, just focus on
that. Because they do that one, and then the actual title, you know, the one with the red graphic font, and that comes up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I watched that originally, and I was like, what? And then I went back and watched that scene at the beginning where she says, oh, I'm going to go to my dad's grave and whatever. And I was like, oh, okay.
So no, I didn't put two and two together then.
But as you say, what the meaning and the relevance, and why she didn't mention anything to anyone about having an undead serial killer in the family.
and if she did know, she could have tried to bargain with him or something, or, you know, but anyway, you know, we're related. Who knows? It worked for Leatherface.
Oh, there's loads of these.
Yeah,
Batman and Superman.
True.
Martha! Yeah. Martha.
All right, hammer down then, Rose.
Okay. I'm not doing Death of Me first.
Sorry? Oh, yeah, shit.
Death of Me.
There we go. The Death of Me or just Death of Me?
Death of Me.
Death of Me.
Death of Me. Our next review is Death of Me. Christina and Neil are a couple holidaying on an island off the coast of Thailand. Awakening in their holiday home, they have no recollection of what happened to them the night before. And when they discover they'd recorded what had happened, it makes things even weirder. Okay, so we've got a great cast here with Maggie Q and Liam Hemsworth.
Luke Hemsworth,
not Liam. Sorry, Luke. The chunkier of the Hemsworths.
He's the Daniel Baldwin of the
Hemsworths. he's still got the looks, but he's a bit more heavy set than his brothers. But anyway, so great cast with these two. And the film opens with them, you know, awakening up. The house is a mess. There's mud all over the walls and all sorts. And they have no idea what had happened. And then they find out they'd been to some bar, been slipped a couple of weird drinks, and then things got even weirder from there. It looks great, but I have issues with this film. It did really test my patience overall. So let's go to Rich to begin with.
I'm going to go for a really silly issue that I had with the film, is that the title appears 18 minutes,
yes,
or just about,
yes,
into the movie. No, nobody should do that. The title is either at the beginning or it's at the end.
This happened to me recently.
The end of the first chapter or something.
This happened to me recently on a Russian film called Sleepless Beauty that I was reviewing. And again, yeah, it's like 20 minutes into the film, all of a sudden the title comes up and you go, what on earth are you doing? Why?
Especially as they've done all the other credits. Not all of them, but they've done a few introductory credits. And then I was like, oh, where's the title? Just forget about it. And then it's like, oh, here you go. Here's the title. we're only like a third into the movie. Or
yeah, it's a stupid artistic thing to do and it needs to stop.
The thing is, it wasn't necessary. I know it punctuated the moment, but it made no difference. If they'd have just put it at the start, that would have been absolutely fine. So that's a really picky thing from me. In terms of I'd quite like the mystery of the film as it opens. You know, nothing's really explained. You think it might be a bit of an in media res, but it's not. And although they do kind of twist the in media res because you get a bit of a flashback and stuff, but or they're watching a video, I should say, of what happened. That reveal is quite interesting. There's lots of the location is not established specifically, but it is a Thai island, I believe. And the, what's it call it? It's the strangers in a strange land kind of set up, getting caught up in the community's religious rituals and stuff. And there's lots of spooky visuals. This is directed by Darren Lynn Bousman, who did several of the Saw movies, including the new Spiral one that's yet to come out, as well as lots of other things like Repo, the Genetic Opera. He's a very sort of stylish director anyway. So there's various moments in the film that are quite creepy. The, you know, mouths and eyes sewn shut kind of stuff is well handled. It goes into spiritual and psychological avenues. So you're not quite sure when something's supernatural or mental. And that's kind of played through the whole movie. We're very much in, making an effort to spoil it, we're in Wicker Man, Rosemary's Baby kind of territory with this one. And I think in that sense, it's absolutely fine. I quite like the way it played out. It wasn't brilliant. Maggie Hughes' performance was good. I haven't actually watched her in a lot of stuff, although I know she's been around for a long time. I saw her in, when she worked in Hong Kong, like Naked Weapon and what was the other one? She did Manhattan Midnight with Richard Grieco.
Yeah. Was she in So Close as well? Series. Yeah.
I don't think she was.
Yeah, in the Kia series. Mission Impossible 3.
Oh, yeah, I saw her in that.
Yeah.
So she's been around for quite a long time. But she's doing quite a lot of these mid-budget horror titles lately, it seems. There was one called Slumber last year, which I haven't seen yet. She's a good strong lead. Luke Hemsworth is the male lead, although he's off screen for a fair amount of time because he disappears and stuff every now and again. I wasn't entirely with his casting. I wasn't sold by him, to be honest. I think this is the first thing I've seen him in. And everyone else is kind of a support player.
Indeed.
Notable. Although I know there was the tattooist lady with all the all the tattoos and stuff. I thought she was really good.
Yeah.
I don't know what her name is, but I liked her.
Steve, how did you get on with Death of Me?
I didn't, to be fair. I wasn't really impressed with it. I thought Maggie Q was good. I just felt that it was just going around in circles all the time. She went to the same bar 3 times, you know, trying to find out what had gone on. And then it didn't really give a decent explanation where her husband kind of went. You know, it shows you one version, but is she hallucinating or is he just vanished? Or it was just seemed very bitty and it didn't flow how I kind of wanted it to, if you know what I mean. I was just... And the ending, oh, it's just bollocks. I was quite bored, to be honest, with it. It didn't get me at all.
I have to agree with you. After the initial setup, which was pretty good, and the video reveal and things, it then sort of settled into this routine of like sort of just inching things forward a little bit and then getting even more baffled as to what was going on.
Misdirections and misinformation.
Inconsistent.
The garden path kind of stuff.
I mean, she felt unconscious about, 10 times? She'd go somewhere, fall unconscious, wake up somewhere else.
It didn't sort of play the card of, you know, they set it up quite early when they say, "Oh, you drank this thing, this Tibetan sort of herb drink, which you know could send you crazy, could kill you, you know, if you drink too much of it." Yeah, and but then it doesn't sort of play on that to sort of suggest that actually everything she's seeing could easily be just that, but it can't be because we've seen the video, you know. So there's that side of it as well. There's a very, you know, they take a very, very, very lax definition of free will at the end in order to justify everything that happens. It's like, oh yeah, it's all free will. It's just like, no, it's not. It's not, you know. Which I thought was quite interesting. And it, you know, it gives us it's almost like the anti-Wicker Man, isn't it? You know, it's that sort of, it sets up that thing of like, which I've said before, I like the ideas of, you know, people doing bad things for the greater good sort of thing. You know, that is one of the themes I do usually enjoy in films, you know. But this one, it didn't really sort of hit it. But I did like the fact that she sort of followed through with her understanding of things. And you know, with huge consequences for this island, which I thought was quite amusing, in a sort of very sort of grim way. But it did try my patience a lot in the second half of it.
Yeah, I mean, like the very last shot,
it
just kind of wipes it out. You know, it just kind of makes a mockery of it in a way. Mm.
Anyway, Steve, what are you going to score this? What are you going to score this?
A 5.
Mm-hmm. Rich?
I'll give it a 6.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 6 as well. I mean, technically it's great. You know, the script needs work, and the performance is good. There's two moments I did enjoy, especially one, and there's sort of violent moments. One when... Luke Hemsworth gets his camera, his phone back of some guy who nicked it. That bit I quite enjoyed. And also when, shall we say, Maggie Q puts on a seatbelt.
Oh, yeah.
That bit was really good as well, you know. So, yeah, good on this violent couple, basically. Sort of driven to violence. But I quite enjoyed those two little moments. So 2 6s and a 5 for Death of Me. Our short shot this week is Hammer Down. A grizzled truck driver and his young daughter antagonize each other whilst on their way to deliver a mysterious cargo inside their 16-wheel truck. That is basically the story. We have two people inside this cab, fighting it out sort of verbally. They obviously love each other but antagonize each other at the same time, until it comes to having to exchange this whatever it is in the back of their truck, and things go south. I thought this was really, really well shot and acted. Really, really exciting little short to watch. Rich, over to you.
Yeah, it was good. It was very solid. I love the way the title appears on the front of the truck, because that is the name of the truck. It's a proper short film with a beginning, middle, and end. Although it does leave potential to for
definitely potential
narration.
Yep.
Quite a long time is spent setting up the characters and their relationship, and that works pretty well, although I'm sort of hungering for some action and sort of waiting to see what's going to happen. And when it does kick off eventually, it is very well executed. It's a big burly bar brawl between two pretty huge guys, and you often see it's between a smaller guy and a big guy, but you don't often see two really big guys go at it.
True.
So they're like chucking each other around the bar, breaking all the tables and stuff. And even the daughter's getting involved a little bit, which is quite fun. So that's all very well executed. And there's a payoff at the end. It's 13 minutes, very well formed, very well made by director Simon Hatt, who's worked on films like Guardians of the Galaxy sequel, upcoming Suicide Squad. Apparently he's a co-producer on that. So very, experienced in filmmaking, a lot of superhero kind of stuff. He was an assistant on X-Men First Class, apparently, stuff like that. So he's seen a lot of how these people work and worked on, in a production capacity, but this is his first sort of writing and directing work. And yeah, definitely love to see more from this guy.
Absolutely. Steve, what about yourself?
Yeah, like I say, beginning, middle, end, it builds up the characters in the first 5 minutes. And, you know, it's a typical father-daughter pushing each other's buttons, trapped in a confined space. And like Rich was saying, when they actually do get to the drop-off point and it kicks off, it really does kick off. I thought it was really, really well shot, the fight itself. And really well done. It felt real, you know, like the punches hurt, you know. It wasn't one of these, like, oh, well, we'll back out. And then, you know, it felt like they really, really went at it. And even when the kid gets involved, even she's throwing down. And it just can't. I know it sounds tough, but I always hate it when they do things like that, like the Italian job at the end. Yeah. It winds me up. And that's probably the only bad thing I've got to say about it, to be fair.
Hang on a minute, lads. I've got an idea.
It's a tease, isn't it, right at the end? It's like, after everything's happened, it's like, now we're going to tease you as to what's in there. It's the Pulp Fiction briefcase all over again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically. It's like,
or it's the and now what moment.
Yeah, from Deep Rising sort of thing, yeah. But yeah, no, this is great. I love, as you say, the characterization as it sort of builds up. The bit where she sort of throws a rock at the windscreen, you know, obviously is used later on. But I like his reaction to it as well. You know, he's like, "Are you meant to do that?" And he goes, "Yeah." And goes, "Yeah, good arm." he's sort of like, he copies her, you know, he sort of mimics her sort of throwing the rock, which I thought was quite nice as well. So yeah, he's sort of like angry but proud at the same time that she's got this good arm for, you know. But no, it was just really, really solid. And I'd love them to do more adventures or even just finish this one, you know, show us what the hell's in that seemingly empty trailer. You know, there's obviously something in there, but what is it? We want to know. So there you go. We don't score the shorts, but we do recommend that you check this out. It's 30 minutes long. We'll put the link in the footnotes. So go check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is Exit Speed. An intercity bus traveling across Texas crosses paths with a motorcycle gang. When one of their members is accidentally killed, the gang chase down the bus into an old wrecking yard where the passengers must fight for survival. Okay, so this has recently turned up on Amazon Prime. I knew nothing about this film going into it and absolutely loved it. It's got a whole disparate group of characters. We've got Lea Thompson as a runaway from the army. She's gone AWOL. We've got Fred Ward as the MP who's been sent to track her down. We've got the bus driver himself, who's also a veteran. We've got a guy who's just got, I can't remember, has he just got out of prison or just got out of the army? The sort of deadbeat dad guy.
Prison, I think.
Doesn't say, but
yeah, off to see his daughter he's never met. So he's basically Nick Cage's character out of Con Air. And then we got there's a mother going back to see her two children. There's
Martin McFly's mum.
Yeah. We've got this young couple, you know, who basically just met in Vegas and you know, hit it off and now traveling across the country together. So we've got all these sort of disparate sort of people sort of thrown together. Oh, and of course the football coach.
Oh yeah. Dodgy football coach.
Dodgy football coach, yeah. So yeah, all these sort of interesting characters, and you know, the film sort of introduces each of them in turn before they get on the bus, and then we got this travel bit. And then they come across this gang of what are they called? Not renegades.
The nomads.
Nomads. So yeah. Who are this sort of dangerous sort of gang of motorcycle gang people. And, you know, the stunt work and everything is really, really good. The stuff where the guy sort of stood on the back of his bike as it's driving down the road, that's scary, basically. Sort of stuff like that. And things just don't go the way you expect them to go at all. You know, there's certain characters who are set up to be the hero from the off, and you know, things go bad. Let's just say that. Rich, over to you.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure where it was going in the opening scene, where we meet Fred Ward and
Leah Thompson.
Fred Ward and the young lady he's chasing, who's the escape from the from the army. So that was a bit slow, and then we sort of meet the characters, and then it all kicks off eventually after we've met the ensemble with completely arbitrary violence. Mm. You know, this gang have just decided to target this bus for no reason whatsoever, and even after that, it's like it's just a thing that happened. These the gang are completely I don't know how to put it really. They're not characterized.
No, they're a cipher, aren't they?
No, I'm not at all.
Yeah, there's no. They don't even have really any lines. I think
they don't speak.
Leader. No, it's very weird. It's almost like a horror movie kind of.
Well, it's like Assault on Precinct 13. You know, the original. They're like almost like a faceless enemy.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so they're gathering and coming after them, and then it all. So you've got the stuff with the bus where they're trying to drive the bus away from them, and that's all really well handled. There's a little bit of a touch of speed and stuff in there, obviously. Same kind of bus, and some of the action's really nicely handled. But also because of the bus, I couldn't help but think of Bus Driver that we watched early episode, which also ended up with them in a sort of a siege situation, didn't it? If I recall correctly,
it did. Yeah, they ended up sort of crossing paths with some meth dealers.
Yeah, so I think a very similar kind of setup with that one, I think, to this. Mm. This has got some bigger names in it. Leah Thompson, notably, Fred Ward specifically, who's peppered throughout the movie, but he doesn't really come into it until the end properly. So he's a bit of a Nicolas Cage sort of guest star almost kind of thing in it. But I love Fred Ward. He's great. And it's every time he's on screen, it's brilliant. But the rest of the cast are really good as well. Leah Thompson is quite unexpected in this movie. She does really well. Desmond Harrington is really the sort of central male hero of the story. While Alice Gretchen is it Annabelle Drake who's the lead? Is that the soldier character?
No, it's Julie Mond.
Oh, Julie Mond, sorry, it's Meredith Cole. Yep. I apologize. Yeah. So they're set up as kind of the two male and female leads, but also we've got the young girl who's
the archery
sort of like the kind of girl who does the archery, which is brilliant. You know, she's really, you know, she's really good at this stuff, but she really doesn't want to injure anyone. But she ends up being the ace up their sleeve and having to face some serious consequences to what she's doing.
So. With the classic line, "I'm a vegan."
Oh yeah, I did hate that bit sort of going down that. Yeah. Sort of, she's really they felt like they really had to underline how
See the other sort of unsung hero of this is the Mexican guy as well.
He's minting. He's awesome.
He comes up with this sort of high powered potato gun thing, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. So yeah, he was damn good in this as well. So yeah.
I mentioned that it's a Christmas movie as well. Really many decorations, but it's set on Christmas Eve.
It's set on Christmas Eve, yeah.
Yeah.
All these people desperate to get home, and things go horribly wrong, and that woman who the one who's sort of like the waspish woman, the mother of two kind of thing, and she turns out to be as hard as nails as well. Mm. She's basically using the excuse of like, I got to get home to my kids kind of thing. And, coming out of that sort of sentiment is going to go one of two ways, and it chose to go the less traveled road for once, with that particular character, which is refreshing. But yeah, she turned into a right badass in this film.
I thought the baddies were quite, and as I say, because then they don't really have a defined leader. Although, the film that I thought of was VFW, where they're those crazy drugged up characters, although they had a defiant leader who was sending them in. But you know, in terms of the
these guys sort of were zombie, sort of pretty unorganized
in
that movie,
whereas in this, they're more like the guys in the Assault. Remember that the Jim Wynorski movie that we watched.
Yeah.
You know, just the gang member kind of thing. And you mentioned the motorcycle stunts a minute ago. So one of the members of the gang is this guy just doing all this weird stuff on his motorbike. You know, they've clearly got somebody who's really professional to just do these sort of really impressive bits where he's standing on top of his bike while it's
standing
moving
on the bike, was kind of like
wheeling it around or something, riding on the handlebars and stuff like that.
It's really freaky. So
that all adds a little bit of extra production value as well. The film is directed by Scott Zeal. Have you ever seen any of his other movies?
I'm not sure, actually.
So
he did Roadhouse 2, apparently.
Yeah, which is one of my favourites. I love Roadhouse
2. Yeah, Roadhouse 2 is a class film.
And but he started out with Broken Vessels, which was a film about drugged up ambulance drivers, if I recall correctly. It's a sort of a it's not to be confused with Bringing Out the Dead, the Nicolas Cage movie, but sort of in a similar vein, I would say. That was quite a good film. I remember seeing that. So, you know, he's a good solid director. He doesn't seem to have made a film recently, Exit Speed. He did one other after that called Shadow Witness, and haven't seen anything of him since. But he did, you know, other things like Cruel Intentions 3 and stuff. So he knew what he was doing. He's very good. He, you know, very good with the cast. You know, he uses all the resources that they had well. You know, it was clearly made for quite a restricted budget.
Yeah,
but they spent the money wisely and they shot it well.
Yeah,
I think that to me that's one of the things with the baddies. I think they've been paid as extras and not. No, honestly, I think that's why they haven't got any lines in the film.
Could be
because you have to pay them more. I mean, it's like at the beginning where someone's in the shop and I think it's the sheriff walks into the shop.
Yeah.
And he speaks to the girl behind the counter 3 times. And she just doesn't reply to him whatsoever. And honestly, I think that's what they've done. I think they've just done that just so they don't have to pay him and they can pump it more into the action bit later on in the film.
But
it works. It works. You know, it's enjoyable. There's, like you say, there's some big, not shocking, well, yeah, some couple of decent shocks in there that you're not expecting. The ones you think are going to, like you say, become the big heroes aren't necessarily that. But no, it's enjoyable. You know, no classic, but yeah, enjoyable film.
Absolutely, yeah. Some good blood squibs as well, you know. Headshots and things going on. So we mentioned this is available on Amazon Prime at the moment. It's definitely worth hunting for. We'll put a link, we'll put the trailer in the footnotes, so check it out. And that's the end of this week's episode. So thank you to Steve and Rich for joining me and talking about these wonderful films.
No problem at all.
No problem.
Check out the footnotes for the links to Voorhees and Cyborg. What's it called? Deadly Machine?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Cyborg Deadly Machine. Also, check us out on Twitter and Facebook at the DTV Digest. Thank you for listening and see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.